May 14th, 2013, Tuesday, Sangha, Toronto, Ontario.
Chapter 12, Devotional Service. We're reading the English translations all the way through, and there are extra points for staying in unison. And the best way to do that, Hare Krishna, is to observe the punctuation marks throughout. There's a pause when there are commas, and there's a stop when there's periods. And if you do that, then we can stay in unison. Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahma, the unmanifested? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on merciful form are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engage in the welfare of all, at last achieve me. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are unhappy. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service, and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O Son of Buddha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me, thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regular principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. If, however, you are unable to work on this consciousness of me, then try to act giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all the living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He by whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, his equipoise and happiness and distress, fear and anxiety is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoise in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and stress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association,
always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service, and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me.
Any other system when it comes to the Bhagavad Gita? That's it.
Send a very warm welcome to the Grace of Sheshaka Prabhu. As most of you know, this is Tuesday Sangha. It is actually a Sankirtan initiative by the Sankirtan team. And of course, the Sankirtan team has been fired up by His Grace of Sheshaka Prabhu. So we're very thankful for his association today. And
thank you very much. Well, since it's a Sankirtan initiative, I'm going to talk a little bit about the importance of transcendental literature and the distribution of literature. Is that all right?
Yes.
First thing is, I'm writing a book about Sankirtan, and it's not finished yet, but I have the first draft of many of the chapters. And if I have your permission, I'll just read the preface. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Oh. Pardon me?
This is the first public reading of your book.
Anything that's on, I've read it in a room to a couple of people. Preface. White Castle is a popular American fast food chain known for its stark white castle-like buildings and for its cheap burgers. Nationally, these franchises move millions of tons of product. The meat of cows systematically slaughtered to satisfy the whims of people's tongues. After reading Srimad Bhagavatam, I could easily identify these eateries as fortresses from which Kali personified dispenses sin wholesale. It was by design, then, that my dear godbrother Divyanga Das and I regularly stormed the gates of the White Castle in St. Louis, Missouri, in order to distribute books to its customers inside. During the early 1980s, every Saturday afternoon after a day of distributing books at Lambert Field, St. Louis's International Airport, on our way back to our residences in the ISKCON St. Louis Temple, we'd make a detour through the poverty-stricken inner city of St. Louis. Divyanga would pull up his silver Chevy Caprice Classic outside the White Castle and keep the engine running while I ran in, cradling a stack of bright blue volumes of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and handed one to every customer. After a week of book distribution at the airport, we usually had an excess of donations. We wanted to even the score by distributing some extra books and charity. So although some people in the White Castle gave donation in return for the books, even those who didn't got to keep a book if they chose to. After these excursions, Divyanga and I would marvel all the way home, and still do even today, at how the sublime Srimad Bhagavatam, which rejects all religious activities that are materially motivated, ended up in the trunk of his Chevy and traveled all the way to the inner city of St. Louis, Missouri, where illiteracy rates were high and where the few people who were literate never would have dreamed of buying a book like Srimad Bhagavatam. We wondered, but still we knew how this miracle had happened. Srila Prabhupada had done it. Following the words of Narada Muni, quote, this Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to create a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. Srila Prabhupada had loaded these hard-bound Vaikuntha deities into trunks brought them to the shores of America, and launched a full-scale spiritual revolution. These books have come all the way from his sanctuary in Vrindavan's Radha-Damodar temple to the humming streets of Manhattan. He meticulously drafted and assembled three volumes containing the world's most detailed knowledge of God, Krishna, conveyed in sublime poetic language, the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then painstakingly arranged for their transport to America. By extreme good fortune, Divyanga and I were among the thousands whose lives had been transformed by these books, and we had joined the revolution. As card-carrying members of this insurgency, now we were running everywhere to distribute these books to everyone we had. In the material world, every soul is under unbearable stress. The pure spiritual being encased by a gross body and subtle mind takes a beating moment to moment and suffers dearly. Srimad Bhagavatam says that there is an ocean of tears in our universe, an ocean created by the accumulated tears shed by souls, disappointed and confounded by the reversals of fortune in this fleeting world. In an attempt to avoid the distress built into this hard struggle for existence, some humans numb their minds and senses through intoxication. Others take to philosophical speculation to either justify or escape the gloom. But Narada Muni explains to Srila Vyasadeva the real cure. O Brahma Vyasadeva, it is decided by the learned that the best remedial measure for removing all troubles and miseries is to dedicate one's activities to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Page by page, Srila Prabhupada's books administers the soothing cure for the materially distressed mind. Hearing about Lord Krishna from the mouths of his pure, unmotivated devotees. During an epidemic of disease, can those who hold the cure not feel responsible for dispensing it? Certainly not. A person with the vaccine must take all risks to distribute it. Ultimately, the cause of all suffering is karmic reaction to sin. In Lord Krishna's own words, transcendental knowledge, Gana Agni, burns to ashes all the karmic reactions of a living being, just as a fire burns to ashes unlimited fuel supplied to it. The saint Rupa Goswami therefore says that the greatest charity work is to distribute transcendental knowledge that relieves suffering people of the world. One who receives such knowledge learns not only the cause of one's suffering, but also the process to stop it forever. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya instructed, distribute this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Let people eat these fruits and ultimately become free from old age and death. Following this order, the Vaishnavas sacrifice their own peace of mind and move into the cities to distribute the medicine to the needy. Srila Prabhupada, for example, despite every conceivable obstacle, old age, no money, no connections, left Vrindavan and daringly boarded a cargo ship bound for America, bringing with him only a few meager personal effects, but trunkloads of first canto Srimad Bhagavatams. These books, pregnant with the words of Lord Krishna and his pure devotee saints like Uddhava, Maitreya, Vidura, Prama, Narada, Shukadev, Parikshit, Prahlad, were further embellished with his sublime purports, the fruits of his lifelong practice of hearing with rapt attention the words of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. As it turned out, people everywhere were ready to hear this spiritual message. They still are. I have therefore written The Art of Book Distribution to encourage devotees everywhere to distribute transcendental knowledge, most particularly in the form of Srila Prabhupada's books. This work is meant not only to help devotees everywhere in their quest to learn and perfect the art of book distribution, but also to inspire and assist whomever is organizing this great transcendental sacrifice. The aim is to create a culture that will live and breathe book distribution, an atmosphere in which devotees can find true happiness in meeting people and introducing them to Krishna consciousness. Through hearing, chanting, and relishing what's in the books, organizing in a systematic way the distributors and the devotees who back up the distributors, my hope is that Srila Prabhupada's movement will be reinvigorated with the spirit Srila Prabhupada himself breathed into it. Distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. Nothing will please His divine grace more. Srila Prabhupada not only asked that his books be widely and profusely distributed, but also encouraged his followers to become expert in presenting them. In the following excerpt, Srila Prabhupada calls book distribution a great art. Quote, I am convinced that if you simply glorify Krishna in our books in the best descriptive manner, that anyone and everyone, no matter even atheist or otherwise, they can be convinced to purchase. Of course, that is a great art, and not everyone can do it. But gradually, by practice of preaching in this way, striving to so much present a wonderful picture of our books to the people, gradually you will master the trick how to do it. Moreover, Srila Prabhupada recommended book distribution as a process of sadhana. In his famous Kriyasu purport, he says, by fully concentrating on distributing books for Krishna, one is fully absorbed in Krishna. This is samadhi. In a typical letter that portrays his encouragement for preaching, he writes, whenever possible, try to talk about Krishna consciousness to your friends and whomever you may meet. Simply by this attempt, you will get superior strength and knowledge about Krishna consciousness. In the art of book distribution, we plumb the depths not only of how book distribution is important to individual ISKCON devotees as sadhana, but also how and why it is vital to the natural organic growth and health of ISKCON society as a whole. In ISKCON today, many devotees are already regularly engaged in distributing books, and a growing number of devotees are eager to get involved. Experts, newcomers, well-wishers, retirees in need of a refresher course, all will find something in this book to inspire them. But last but not least, this book is meant to give a fresh and favorable second look at book distribution for those who, for whatever reason, now think of it disparagingly. The book includes foundational principles for building a successful book distribution program, the paramount importance of proper conduct in public, illustrative and inspirational first-person stories with dialogue, new methods of book distribution, secrets of highly effective book distributors, and much more. Srila Prabhupada wrote in a letter to a dear disciple, tax your brain for finding new and better ways for distributing our books widely. In writing this book, I've sincerely tried to do just that. And if on account of taxing my brain, one devotee is inspired to take up this art, or if one extra book is distributed, I will consider the book a success. And if the art of book distribution helps spark a second wave of massive book distribution in my lifetime, I will die a happy soul. Hare Krishna. And now I'm going to read a little bit from the book Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. This is a biography of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is my Param Guru, many others, Param Param Guru. And you can see that Srila Prabhupada followed in his footsteps, in the footsteps of his spiritual master, in mood and method. And this particular chapter brings out the penchant that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had for what he called the great drum, or the Brihat Madanga. This Madanga is beautiful and it can be heard for a few blocks. In fact, anyone walking through a city street who suddenly hears the ching, ching, ching and the sound of the Madanga suddenly becomes enlivened, even if they don't know what it is. It breaks the monotony of the city sounds, and suddenly there's an otherworldly vibration coming through the streets. And the printing press, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta deemed the greater Madanga because it's written kirtan. It's that same sound vibration. But it's in written form and it can be distributed widely. Books go from person to person, house to house. They stay in libraries. They wait for a person to mature in their sukriti, in their the good fortune that grows in their heart gradually, that gives them the qualification to pick up the book and read it with earnestness. And when they do, there's combustion. That is, they suddenly realize that the voice speaking to them from the book is the same voice speaking to them from their inner heart. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Pajatam Priti Purvakam Dhanami Buddhi Yogantam Yedamam Upayantike. If someone sincerely approaches me with love, I give them the intelligence to come to me. And Krishna's desire for this entire creation is to bring all souls who have turned their face away back home, back to Godhead. However, he doesn't personally become involved, because it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dveshostina Kriya, that I'm equal to everyone. Nabhachanti Tumam Bhaktya Maite Teshu Chapyaham. But for those who do turn towards me, there's a very intimate relationship. And therefore, those who take up the work of introducing people to Krishna and helping them to reconnect become very dear to Krishna. And he says this in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that there's no servant more dear to me than the person who preaches this message. After all, there's so many messages in this world. Everyone's passing some message along, one degree or another. But if we look at them qualitatively, what is the end goal of each one of those messages? And we study the science to understand the difference between material sound, spiritual sound, and their effects. And we become aware of the fact that there are different varieties of energy. There is inferior energy, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhumirapo anulo vayu kammano buddha eva cha ahankara ityame bina prakritirashkara. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, these are my separated material energies. And there's a higher energy, apare matasvanyam prakritim vedime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. And that's the soul, jiva, the living entity, that conscious individual that we see illuminates and animates the bodies of this material world. And that is the main interest of the Vedic project, to awaken those souls who are the superior energy and inform them of the superior energy of a world that's not constantly in flux. Just coming right out and saying it, there's a different world besides this. It's never destroyed. It's supreme. It's superior energy. And you're part of that world. That's a huge message to pass on to people. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it's like the poor man who realizes suddenly that he's rich. Immediately his prospect in life changes. And the Vedic sound is meant to inform us of that. The Omkar is meant to open our eyes to the spiritual world. And the sound of the Gayatri mantras, the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra, which is the essence of all the Vedic literature, actually awakens us to our real prospect in life. And that's what everyone's looking for. That's why everyone goes to school. They want more prospects. They're trying to expand their capability so that they can experience more, they can be more, they become more. And the Vedas call out and saying, you can have everything, it's all available now in the human form of life. But how is it available? Those who have struggled in the material world through thousands of eons have come to the same end through the death of the physical body and attachment to those things in this world that are composed of inferior energy. They don't progress. According to the Bhagavad Gita, you may go up and down within the confines of the material world, but there's no actual gain. You're still in the same prison, whether you're wearing golden shackles or silver shackles or iron shackles. A shackle is a shackle after all. The real goal is to become free, to see the free light of the spiritual world and have complete freedom, creative freedom, to love God and express it in unlimited ways through arts and music and dance And that's what goes on in the spiritual world, that information is available. And that's what we're distributing and making available to people all over the world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, following the footsteps of the other great acharyas in our line, advocated unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service as the only means to satisfy the soul. And he also fought against those kinds of conceptions and philosophies that propagated anything less than that. And he also emphasized the importance of the devotees going out to meet people and to make friends with them, give them an opportunity to hear spiritual sound vibration. He told his sannyasis that they should go out every day and at least knock on 3 doors. And he said, even if people don't take, even if they close the door, then they'll think, somebody spiritual came to my door today, and they'll remember that there's more to life than just the routine that I'm going through right now. And if people take some transcendental literature and read it, they can immediately awaken, because this is the capability one has in the human form of life. Tato Brahma Jignasa. The human body is specifically designed to absorb spiritual knowledge. And if one simply has the slightest inquiry about God, then that desire to know will be fulfilled. Krishna from within the heart, and externally in the form of his representatives, and also in the form of these books, the Shastra. Everyone's born into the world with conceptions in their minds, some scars, acquired after birth in the material world and coming in contact with various ideas and conceptions. And it is these impressions in our mind that give us our perspective and by through which we make our choices in life. And because of those ideas which come into the thought world and then are translated into action, and our actions determine our habits, and our habits determine our future. We must plant new seeds, new thought seeds within the mind, and those come from the scriptures. The best ideas, the pure idea of the spiritual world. And if someone plants one of those seeds in their mind, then it will grow. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur advocated this printing of literature and mass distribution for many reasons, partly because well-written and presented literature changes society. People take it seriously. And over time, when those literatures are collected by the people in general and kept and read, they begin to assume the values of those books, and they advocate them to others, and they form a basis through which they can teach other people. And in that way, the ideologies can be spread and the values can be spread. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when he set up his temples, in one place he had a printing work and he put it right alongside the altar. In other words, there's the deities, we have these arch openings, and if you look at one of the other openings, you would see a printing press there, fully operational. His point was that the printing press and the work that's going on there is fully transcendental. It's just the same energy as the deity of the deity worship. So this is from chapter 13 of Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, in the first volume, called The Great Drum. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's definition of kirtan included practical activities for broadcasting Lord Chaitanya's teachings, especially widespread dissemination of Harikatha and the production and distribution of transcendental literature. He considered that, in and of itself, lecturing was insufficient for establishing a successful preaching mission. Authoritative books were essential to systematically define and disseminate Bhaktisiddhanta and preserve doctrinal integrity. He thus vigorously promoted publication and distribution of Krishna-conscious writings and dubbed the printing press the Brihat Madanga, Great Drum, for For while the sound of a madanga in kirtan reverberates only a short distance, the beat of the Brihat Madanga resonates throughout the world. Srila Saraswati Thakur declared that to produce written works for the enlightenment of the general populace is real service to the Lord, and hence preferred publishing even to opening temples, exemplified by his founding a press before establishing any mutt. Mutt means a temple. He deemed that temples are required, but mostly for the uplift of common people and neophyte devotees, whereas the business of advanced and empowered devotees is to write, publish, and widely distribute transcendental literature. Thus, his major engagement was preparing writings aimed at sober and thoughtful persons to impress upon them the depth and seriousness of the Gaudiya message. During a visit to the site of the nearly finished mutt at Bhat Bazar, Srila Saraswati Thakur and his accompanying disciples expressed delight at the prospect of preaching opportunities it would afford, yet he clarified that book production was even more vital than building temples. Quote, just as externally the Gaudiya Math has erected a great palace, multiple books must be written and published to establish internal Haribhajan in this world. A temple and kirtan hall for cultivation of transcendental kirtan fashioned in the form of Granth Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Pakta Bhagavatas, pure devotees, are more important than a temple built with bricks and stones. Because by creating the former kind of temple, Harikatha can be broadcast much further on this plane. Now we have founded a seat, notwithstanding having spent one man's entire life's earnings to build a fort for propagating Bhagavad Gita. Even so, only if herein we protect ourselves from the association of materialists and the tumultuous welter of Kali Yuga, will Hari Kata be preached from this place. Only by building ideal lives and a mansion of books can the message of Bhagavad Bhakti remain permanently in the sphere. Unquote. In his essay, Madhva Gaudiya Literature, Srila Saraswati Thakur wrote that Gaudiya literature is the only hope for fallen souls of this epoch, and predicted that its influence would soon spread throughout the world. Quote, the Madhva Gaudiya literature enshrines the account of the career and teachings of Sri Chaitanya and his associates from the pens of the eternal servants of the Lord. They not only rank with revealed literatures of the world, but furnish the only complete divine dispensation for all ages, and the specific dispensation for the present age. The reason why the promulgation of the divine dispensation has not been followed by the establishment of unadulterated theism all over the world is to be sought in our neglect to try to understand the Gaudiya literature by the only method of approaching the transcendental subject, that is, through the medium of the spiritual guide. The fear of being victimized by the quacks and pseudo-gurus need not trouble those who do not themselves intend to be so victimized in their quest of the absolute. It is imperatively necessary for all persons who really wish to make the spiritual acquaintance of the Gaudiya literature to engage in the quest of bona fide Chaitanyites. You're all bona fide Chaitanyites. If they are themselves not in earnest or are disposed to be content with anything less than knowledge of the absolute revealed by the Gaudiya literature, they are foredoomed to failure or to fall into the hands of pseudo-gurus. But no really cautious person who knows his own mind need miss the sight of the bona fide devotee of Godhead if he is really in need of the service of the divinity. The Gaudiya literature will be translated into all the languages of the world by the agents of the divine mercy at the appointed time. There will also, no doubt, spring up a mighty host of pseudo-exponents and an immense body of spurious Gaudiya literature, as has been the case in the past. This is to be expected by all really thoughtful persons. But nothing can have the least power of depriving a person of the mercy of the real agents of divine mercy except one's deliberate refusal to avail of the same when it will be offered at his very door in a perfectly recognizable form. As soon as a single person will have conceived the sincere desire of undertaking the promulgation of the tidings of the Gaudiya literature to the peoples of this world, he is thereby enrolled among the agents of divine mercy with power to forward the fulfillment of this expressed wish of the Supreme Lord. The Gaudiya literature will not long remain confined to the Bengali-speaking people. It will in a short time expand and display its full brilliancy through the medium of all the languages, including those of the birds, beasts, and the vegetable tribes. We've got a little work to do with the vegetable tribes. Publication and circulation. Vaishnavas in Bengal have been publishing books and magazines, although largely of dubious nature, since the early 19th century. Everyone okay? You can hear all right? Okay. Himself a prodigious author, well aware of the potential of the press, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had encouraged Bimala Prasad's natural literary inclination and also trained him in all aspects of press skills. So Bimala Prasad is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur before he was initiated. And his father is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who also had a penchant for this distribution of books. He himself had written over 100 books in his spare time and had distributed them around the world to people like Thoreau, Emerson, and your own McGill University. At that time, many seminal Gaudiya writings remained unpublished or had been issued only in small numbers. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had long wanted to make such works available, and he entrusted Bimala Prasad with this task. But when Sri Siddhanta Saraswati suggested printing Govinda Lilamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur responded, "I'll tell you someday." When later Sri Siddhanta Saraswati again asked about this, Bhaktivinoda replied, "If you are so anxious to print it, print one copy to preserve it for posterity. It is not meant for distribution." The Govinda Lilamrita is a very esoteric book about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Bhaktivinoda, as we find later, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, holding this mood he imbibed from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was very careful not to broadcast these kinds of intimate pastimes of the Supreme in public, because they would be misunderstood. He said, "We keep them high above our head. We engage in menial service to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as we are qualified, he will reveal what is necessary." Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur felt that tremendous damage had been done by misuse of intimate Goswami works and thought it better that they be destroyed than be made publicly available, considering the paucity of persons qualified to read them. Although Sri Siddhanta Saraswati had already started preparing Govinda Lilamrita for printing, he then desisted. Subsequently, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati requested and received Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's blessings to print Vaishnava literature on an unprecedentedly large scale. But when he approached Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji for the same benediction, he was instead rebutted. "There is no one interested to properly understand such books. Better you stay in Mayapur and do bhajan." That was his guru who told him that. Seeing his disciple mortified and flummoxed, having been encouraged by one guru and then discouraged by another, Babaji Maharaj conceded, "If you want to do so, use hired men. Don't waste your own time." Desiring to print Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentaries on the most important Upanishads, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati wrote to Sri Vamshi Bharananda Dev Goswami, who replied from the Shamasundar temple in Vrindavan, that because the parchments had become so old and illegible, they had been committed to the sacred Jamuna River and were lost forever. This is happening all the time now. Mukunda Datta Prabhu, who's an expert in preserving ancient scriptures, was telling me that tens of thousands of original scriptures are destroyed every year. They're lost because of not being taken care of properly. Some of them are just sitting around in people's houses and things like that. They don't even know what they are. Or, you know, and they just become destroyed and lost forever. So that's the nature of this world. Even the message, which is passed down through parampara, we know, yoga nashta parantapa, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the message has been lost. Therefore, I'm renewing it. What to speak of things written down, they can become destroyed. And that in this material world, everything is always going through the process of entropy and diminishing and being lost, and there needs to be a constant influx of these. Well, in one way, by mass distribution of these literature, we're preserving them for posterity's sake. In 1914, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati began producing as installments in Sajjana Toshini a Vaishnava almanac titled Sri Navadvipa Panjika. And starting from 1918, he issued it as a pocketbook giving information for a full year. After the Bhagavad Yatra was shifted to Rajapatana in January 1914, finances dwindled and production of devotional literature gradually came to a halt. To revive it, in July 1915, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati transferred the press to a rented house in Krishnanagar where they could obtain outside jobs, which was unviable in rural Mayapur. Thereafter, funds generated were not only sufficient for publishing devotional works, but were a key source of income for maintaining and expanding Sri Siddhanta Saraswati's rudimentary mission for undertaking projects such as excavating Radhakund in Mayapur, and for meeting legal costs such as those incurred in dislodging an unauthorized occupant of land in Mayapur. To supervise and push publication efforts, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati relocated, along with the printing operation, now renamed Bhagavat Press, to Krishnanagar, where many gentlemen would visit to hear his Hari Katha. At the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's passing, most of his writings remained unprinted or published, only serially in journals. Other than among the educated class of Calcutta and in some outlying areas he had visited, the monumental teachings of this great Acharya remained largely unknown. Resolving to rectify this by bringing Bhaktivinoda Vani to a wider audience, both in Bengal and beyond, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati first concentrated on publishing the Thakur's writings. Considering that, like the songs of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, those by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur express the deepest purports of Shuddha Bhakti in simple language accessible to all, Srila Saraswati Thakur arranged for collections of both these Acharya's compositions to be widely circulated throughout Bengal, Assam, and Orissa for the welfare of the general public. Narottam Das Thakur had expanded Vaishnavism widely through his songs. We know how musicians become popular. People revere them. There's something about musicians. When someone is an expert musician, songwriter, and so forth, you know, people practically worship them. Even in the mundane sense, we have the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and so many things. That there's something about music that really gets into people's souls. And Narottam Das Thakur had written in simple Bengali language these beautiful songs which explain the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they had been huge for expanding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission and going all over India. He had 20,000 copies of Prema Bhakti Chandrika printed, that's Narottam Das Thakur's book, and distributed free of charge in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bengali song, Radha Krishna Bol. Radha Krishna Bol, 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 Hare Shobha, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Bol, 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 Hare Shobha. Free of charge, 20,000 copies. Hey, we should do that. Printed a rescript, a handbill for passing out on Nagar Sankirtan. So they would sing that song and they would pass out the song on a little, you know, sheet to people. Maybe we could do that on the next Harinam. In which Srila Saraswati Thakur would occasionally participate and give those leaflets to passers-by. As a major service to the previous Acharyas and for the benefit of his own disciples and contemporary and future Vaishnavas and scholars, Srila Saraswati Thakur undertook the mammoth project of publishing, with elaborate indexes and Rupanuga commentaries, those scriptures most important to followers of Lord Chaitanya. Circa 1920, he began collecting handwritten and printed editions of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavata. After gathering and sifting through all available extant versions, he produced with annotations a critical text free from what he ascertained as the errors, conjectures, omissions, and interpolations typifying most current publications. In 1923, Srila Saraswati Thakur established the Gaudiya Printing Works in Calcutta. It began fascicular publishing of Srimad Bhagavatam with Bengali translation and commentary, a project that took 12 years to complete. His commentary was in two parts, Ananda Gopal Tatya, selected relevant references from Srimad Bhagavatam itself and other scriptures, and from the glosses of previous acharyas, and Sindhu Vaibhav Vibhriti, his own original contribution, which was restricted to the portions of the Bhagavatam dealing with classic philosophical expositions. For the first verse of the book, the Vibhriti covered 22 double-column pages, total gloss, filling over 40 pages. Another elaborate project that he inaugurated and oversaw was preparation of an extensive index for Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. A team of scholarly Gaudiya Math devotees and hired Gaudiya pundits labored for several months to finally produce this directory featuring as its principal subjects alphabetical lists of verses, names of persons and places, including mountains, oceans, rivers, etc. Technical terms from Darshan Shastra and Ra Shastra, philosophical terms, food items, and even each noun, adjective, and adverb, including the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. A similarly thorough index of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat was also prepared. These two classics were also released in installments. When the commentaries, indexes, and other ancillaries were complete, they were published with the original text in inclusive volumes as massive reference works, thus forming lasting contributions to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Srila Saraswati Thakur regarded the founding of a new press as an important breakthrough, and celebrated such occasions with functions of Harikatha and Kirtan. In 1936, he installed the Paramarthi Printing Works in the compound of the Satchidananda Math, just in front of and slightly to the side of the deities, thus demonstrating a principle he repeatedly emphasized. Pantratrik Mark, centered around Archan or deity worship, and Bhagavat Mark, centered around Shravanam Kirtanam, including preaching, are to be conducted simultaneously. At the installation ceremony from within the press room, he explained to devotees sitting both inside and outside, the press building, the printing machine, and the composing materials should not be considered mundane. Everything here, even the bricks and pillars, are uppercut or non-different from Krishna. The Paramarthi printing works had been established with a press formerly owned by Sri Madhusudan Sharma, an Ayurvedic doctor from Berhampur. Providentially, in 1936, Sharma had been present at a reception for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati en route to Madras at Berhampur station. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had addressed the gathering of devotees, quote, "This time I have not entered Berhampur town, only the station. My blessings to the people of Berhampur." He also requested the devotees to propagate Shuddha Bhakti in Ariya. Madhusudan Sharma was impressed, and upon perusing a copy of the Paramarthi magazine, he became even more so, to the extent that when informed that it was printed at an outside press, he immediately decided to donate his own printing machine, complete with type and all other ancillary equipment. So, I want to stop for just a moment and take reflections or questions. And to have a drink of water. Yes?
I missed who you were referring to. The person who said that that all of the items, even the bricks and pillars, printing press, are considered non-dependent Krishna. I was wondering, who was the person who said that?
That was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's the guru of Srila Prabhupada. That's who the book's about. That's his biography. Yes?
I have a question. I heard about Dr. Prabhupada saying that transcendental literature. I have reading some of the books which stretch like transcendental energies, transcendental sound, transcendental things like that. So what's the essence of this transcendental? Quite often when I read the books, I come across this kind of term a lot. So what's the essence of this?
What is the essence of transcendental sound? What is the meaning of it?
Yeah, transcendental literature, the new term which I heard from you. So what's the essence
of it? You're not alone in asking that question.
Pardon?
You're not alone in asking that question. It's a perennial question. In fact, you'll find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, 77th chapter, which is called Prayers by the Personified Vedas, the same question is asked, a similar question, about how is it that with mundane ears, we say mundane, we say material senses. In other words, if you, reverse engineer this body, you'll find out that it's made out of common ordinary elements like earth, water, fire, and air. So how is it that with elements that are material, one can actually hear transcendental sound? How can you use an ear to hear it, and how can you use a tongue to transmit transcendental sound? That is a question that was asked millions of years ago, and the four Kumaras were discussing that. And Parikshit Maharaj also asked that question, so his guru, Shukadeva Goswami, referred back to what previous acharyas had discussed and concluded about the topic. But when we say transcendental sound, we're talking about transcendental means that which is beyond the material world, which is a reflection of the spiritual world. In the Upanishads, especially the Sri Isha Upanishad, there's a description, all of the Upanishads, which are the first transcendental section of the Vedas, there's a distinction made between what is transcendental and what is material. And they ask us to examine ourselves first to see that the consciousness is different from the body. And there is a world of consciousness. This material world is made of inferior elements like earth, water, fire, air. They're not conscious, they're dead. But what animates them is spiritual, it's transcendental. And there's a source for both the material and the spiritual worlds, which is the supreme transcendental person, Krishna. And those sound vibrations that come from the spiritual world are different, of different quality. They're a different quality than the vibrations of this material world. And they have a different effect. Anyad evahur sambhavat, anyad ahura sambhavat, iti shushru madhiranam, yenas tadvich chakshade. The Upanishads say that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and another result is obtained by worshipping that which is not supreme. And similarly, when one hears transcendental sound vibration, it awakens one's original consciousness. I'm trying to discern whether that's transcendental vibration or not. But once Prabhupada heard a baby crying, he said they're uniquely empowered to pierce the environment. So transcendental is that which is beyond the material limited sphere, comes from the spiritual world. And transcendental literature is the Vedas are are eternal sound vibrations. They're not created at any particular time. They eternally exist. And they appear in the world in order to give direction to those conscious living entities to go back to the spiritual world. And the essence of all the transcendental sound, especially in the Kali Yuga, has been condensed into a zip file. And that's called the Hare Krishna Mantra. And just by that one zip file, if you open it properly through the, you know, using the proper software, which is a life of devotion, which Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktima Mabhijananti, there's a way in which to approach that transcendental sound. In fact, sound, the Vedas say everything's created by sound. We did a seminar recently called The World Runs by Mantra, because everything runs by mantra. If you want to build a building, you have to first create a sound vibration and start talking about it. It comes into your thought process, and then you'll go and tell someone about it. I'm thinking about building a building. Really? Maybe I can help you out. I know somebody. You can drop a blueprint. What do you think? He said, well, how big do you want it? 8 stories and so forth. The vibration then begins to manifest the gross materials that go into the building, but it comes from sound vibration. And similarly, when Brahma, who is the secondary creator of this material world, makes these mantras, he creates all these subtle and gross living beings, the prototypes of which then propagate and expand into all the different universes. And that all comes from sound vibration. And our entanglement in this world comes from ingesting a certain kind of sound vibration. And the Vedanta Sutra says, anavritti shabdat. You can be liberated by sound. Liberated by sound. But what kind of sound? It has to be transcendental sound. It's sound which is describing the supreme absolute truth, Krishna, and the spiritual world. Yeah. Well, if someone says that, then unless you're completely familiar with the book...
So before you ask our question, let's complete that part.
Okay.
So what I'm understanding basically is that, summarizing basically, understanding that what transcendental basically means is, what is basically from this material world, this is transition from the material world to the spirituality, is that right?
Well, let me put it a slightly different way. There's a verse which describes the difference between what is real and what is not real. All facts are not real. They're not real if they're not related to the source, the original source of everything. And this is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ritirtam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chakvani tat vidyaratmano mayam yatabhaso yatatamaha. Krishna tells Brahma in the beginning of creation that anything that you see that doesn't have a relationship to me, know that to be illusory. That's material. That's mundane. That's what's called maya, or that which is not. It's insubstantial. Factually, everything has a connection to the Supreme. But when I see it as separate, I'm seeing something illusory. I'm seeing the shadow and not the not the real substance. So the reality is spiritual, and the shadow, or the thing which is disconnected, apparently disconnected by consciousness, that is the non-reality, or maya. And so, all things which are reconnected to the original source, Krishna, become spiritualized. And this is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmanohutam brahmaiva tena gantavya brahmakarma samadhina. Krishna says that any apparently material thing that you use in the service of the original source, Krishna, becomes spiritualized. Just as much as if you take an iron rod and you put it in fire and you keep heating it up and it gets hotter, 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 pretty soon it turns into fire. You can look at it and it may seem to have the same rod-like shape, but factually it's red hot. It's not different from fire. So our material body or any of our possessions or even the sound vibration that we make, when it is reconnected to the original source, Krishna, it becomes spiritualized, Krishnaized. Factually, matter is simply spiritual energy which has been covered over by illusory energy due to faulty consciousness. And when the consciousness becomes rectified, a person then sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord. And the Upanishads say, one who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being, he's seeing everything rightly situated. And transcendental sound vibration is especially exalted in the Vedic literature because of all the senses, the ear is considered to be the most important. It's always active, even when you're sleeping. And before you see God, you hear God. Hearing is more important than seeing. And the ear has a way in which when the transcendental sound goes in the ear, it enters into the heart and it transforms our heart. And when the heart is transformed, our trajectory in life is then rectified and we can go back to Godhead. We can actually move in a way that's productive and progressive. You're welcome. Thank you for your beautiful question. And regarding your question about when we're presenting this to other people, we make no immediate claims to people that this is better than what they have. And we may be unaware of what they have. Therefore, how can we make such claims? Therefore, it's better to inquire from them. If someone asks you a question, for instance, they may say, are you saying this is better than the Bible? You might ask, well, what's in the Bible? What's the philosophy in the Bible? First, tell me that, and then I can give you a comparison. And ultimately, what I find is useful to present to people is that what we're talking about is a principle of purity, and that can be applied anywhere you find it. Gold is gold wherever you find it, right? It doesn't matter if it's from Mexico or from Australia or from India. You just want to know, is it pure gold or not? In Hawaii, they used to sell these chains right along with the timeshare guys. They have these chains, gold chains they would sell. And lots of tourists would buy them because they look kind of like gold. And if you don't know any better, you just buy it. And after a while, they turn green. Why? Because there's some gold in them, but there's some other things in them too. There's other alloys that oxidize. Gold doesn't oxidize. And in philosophy, what we're looking for are two principles. Ahaituki apratiyata means unmotivated, uninterrupted service to God. And so if any literature has that, is propagating that, that's what we're looking for. We don't claim exclusivity, but we say, let's see. Let's just see where it is. If you find that in any practice and that mood of unmotivated, uninterrupted service, what we call Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotion to God is there, then that's what we're after. We're, as Neil Young said many years ago, I'm a miner for a heart of gold. Keep me searching for a heart of gold, and I'm growing old. So we're searching for that gold. That's what we're interested in. And we find it particularly in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the book that we have, so we invite people to investigate for themselves. We make no immediate condescending claim that ours is better than another. But we do present, you know, what we consider to be the gold standard. Was that too convoluted? Is that right? Yes.
Just I want to mention about this subject you said, the books when we distribute go out, we should not, which I realize, we should not present that our books are religious books, because religious has many conflict and religious being taught by different groups, different sect, and we are not sect, we are a group. Our books should be presented as it is a spiritual entity. So when as a spiritual entity beings, so it is above the religious, because it could be religious, but it cannot be spiritual sometimes. That's very, that's I thought.
I was just telling the Brahmacharis today, I think. No, so was that today we were talking about? Yeah, sometimes people say, is this religious? And oftentimes they're asking that. You can tell by the way they ask the question that they don't like the idea of religion, because people have heard so many different kinds of motivated religious processes that they have a natural aversion. So oftentimes when I anticipate that that's what the person's asking, is this religion? I'd say, no, this book completely rejects all religious processes that are materially motivated, and it propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. This is the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It just comes out and says, this book completely rejects religious ideas that are materially motivated, and it propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. It's universal. The spiritual knowledge, religion, is meant to be a universal process, Sanatana Dharma, to address the inner need of every soul, which is to reconnect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And anything that mixes some other motive in that becomes unseemly. Naishkarmyam apyachuta bhavabhartam nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam kutakpana shashvada padramishvade nacharvatam karma yadapyakaranam. Narada Muni said that any religious process that doesn't have the conception of achuta bhava, which means this feeling for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the infallible God, in a personal way, is not beautiful. Ultimately, it's not. We don't consider it beautiful. Nashobate, it doesn't look good. It's not very attractive. Nashobate jnanam alam. Even if it's got exalted knowledge about, even if it's transcendental knowledge, even if it's transcendental to the modes of material nature, if it doesn't include a chitta bhava or feeling for the Supreme Personality of God, it doesn't look so nice. Not very good. Better get it fixed.
Now I understood what is transcendental.
Haribo! Now, your job is to pass it on to everybody else. Yeah. And then it says, what to speak of fruit of activities that are miserable from beginning to end. That is, working hard to try to adjust the situation in the material world. Happiness by adjustment. Prabhupada used to compare it. You're carrying a heavy box on one shoulder. You get tired. So you shift it to the other shoulder and you think, oh, much better. But then after a while, your other shoulder starts to hurt, so you put it on your head. And now it's okay. Not okay, sir. You're carrying a heavy box. So the Shastra is saying, you know, put down the box and find your original service to the Supreme. Other questions or points? Reflections? Here comes the microphone.
Earlier you were mentioning that when Sukriti reaches a point, a person takes a book. So if we want to increase book distribution, then we should increase people's security. So how to practically do that?
By your enthusiasm. When your desire for them to take Krishna conscious, take a book, is greater than their desire to reject it. And super soul, you know, there's a toss-up. It's like in basketball in May, they throw the ball at us. You know, so powerful preachers can actually create that impetus in somebody. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this in the Madhurya Kadambini, that sometimes through strong preaching, if somebody's so enthusiastic and they have so much overflow of what they're getting, and when they talk to somebody, it wakes them up. They suddenly feel something from that, those strong words. And Bhagavatam says that when a pure devotee speaks, because he has no motive except to please Krishna, the vibration is different. Why? Poetically speaking, the vibration touches the lotus feet of Krishna and dislodges the saffron mercy particles that rest there. And then the vibration gets mixed with those saffron mercy particles. So when it enters the ear and the heart, it purifies. So the vibration becomes different. Therefore, Prabhupada says that all the devotees, he wanted all the devotees to become pure devotees so that they could affect this kind of change in the hearts of other people. So you can't give what you don't have. But if you act as a representative of a pure devotee, you're also on the path of pure devotion. And we see that the early devotees who joined Prabhupada and didn't know much about Vedic philosophy or anything about anything, when it came to the process, he instilled in them this faith. They were eager to fly all over the world and present this to people. For instance, it was their idea, Shama Sundar, I think, came up with the idea, let's go get the Beatles into this. I mean, who goes and gets the Beatles into stuff? But they brought it to Prabhupada, and he asked a few questions about it. So, okay, go ahead. And they just flew off. They didn't have enough money to get into England, because you had to have a certain number of money. So instead of going all together, a couple of them would go, and they'd take the money, and then they'd send it back, so the rest of them could go. And they were effective. They actually were able to meet the Beatles. Shama Sundar, some of these original devotees, great pioneers of the Sankirtan movement, they had this, what I like to call the house on fire desire. This is the secret to Krishna consciousness, to preaching Krishna consciousness. You have to have a house on fire desire. That's my next book. It sounds like Tony Robbins or something. House on fire desire. I got that because Sudama's wife, Chintamani, told us that when they first got married, they were in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada called him up to his room, and he said, I think you should go to Japan. But Prabhupada, we don't speak Japanese. It doesn't matter. He said, if your house is burning down and you want to get help, you'll be able to communicate that. You just make gestures or whatever you have to do. Hey, Arusha, tell us about it.
I just called 911.
That works. And so you have to have that intense desire. That's the secret to Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami says, Krishna bhakti ras bhavito mati kritam yari kritopi lapite. You can't get Krishna consciousness by doing good things in the world, working hard at piling up materially based sukriti over millions of lifetimes. But if somehow or other you get an intense desire to attain Krishna consciousness, which comes from good fortune by association with sadhus, then you have the capital to be able to purchase that. So when we go out to meet people, if we're representing properly, we're in line, then it's like a copper wire that's connected to the original source. And what we're speaking is authorized. It will have its effect. And also, we have our own realization mixed in. And that will make a kind of enthusiasm. I'm not talking kind of enthusiasm where you block the path and it's like, no, you got to take this. Although, that sometimes works as well. Some of the earlier devotees, like Udimanta, who were so eager to distribute Prabhupada's books, and nobody knew how to do it. There was no handbook. He went out, and Keshava Prabhu, who just recently passed away, unfortunately, was one of the great pioneers of book distribution, started at the San Francisco Temple. I was interviewing a lot of devotees for this book and asking them who distributed the first books, how did it start, and apparently everybody distributed the first book, from what I can tell. But in any case, the... There were lots of Krishna books, the gigantic Krishna books that came out, and none of them had really been sold outside the temples. A few of them had sold in the temple gift shops and such, but no one had actually taken them door to door.
and sold them, you know, one to one on or during Harinams and things like that. And the temple was broke, needed to have money, and Bhudimata suggested, let's just sell these Krishna books. And Keshava, according to what Jambavan told me, who was there at the time, said, oh, that won't work. And Bhudimata took him out anyway, and he came back the first day having sold three Krishna books. It was a cause for celebration at the San Francisco temple. And the next day he sold five, and then seven. And pretty soon he was up to selling 20 books a day. He was a very tall, well-built, very enthusiastic, red-haired, you know, devotee who had this unbounded enthusiasm. He used to break madungas when he played them, because he played them so hard. And when he was so enthusiastic, he would go out on the street and he would meet people and he would fall at their feet and beg them to take the book. But he'd fall to his knees and beg them to take the book. And they would be overwhelmed by his enthusiasm and they would take it. So whether they already have the Sukriti and they're open for it, or you created in them by your enthusiasm, by that natural enthusiasm that you have, appreciation for the book, and the kind of effulgence that you have from practicing Krishna consciousness, then people will take it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu attracted Prakashananda Saraswati by his effulgence, not by philosophy so much. In the beginning, they saw his effulgence and they became attracted. And that's what most people are not attracted to philosophy or convinced by it. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a man to wisdom, but you can't make him think. And if you try to convince people intellectually, generally, it's not very successful. But people become, their souls are perceptive. I'm kind of perceptive too, so. Sensitive, I should say. So souls are sensitive. They're the most sensitive. They're more subtle than the intelligence, and they feel. That's what we are. We're sentient, feeling beings. We have these this deep feeling capacity. So when people meet somebody who's actually overflowing with natural spiritual enthusiasm because they practice this discipline, then they become effective. Gaur Premanande Hari Gaur. Shri Shri Radhakir Chor Gopinath Ki Jai. Shri Gauri Tai Ki Jai. Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhachaji Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Gaur. That's the end, right?
You can go.
Really? Okay, do you have... Do you want to keep going, or do you want to... Yes.
So if you have some more questions, I guess we can go, and we can catch the later part of that allegation.
What's the risk that trying to share Krishna consciousness with someone, one gets infected with some other types of consciousness? Mm. And how to guard against that?
Chant really good rounds. And also, generally, there was some kind of rumor going around that when devotees were going out distributing books by shaking hands, they were taking on people's karma. And that was brought directly to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, no, when you're preaching on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you become inoculated. And you're not taking their association, you're giving your association, or you're passing on the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to them, so you're not affected. And he gave the example of a doctor. He also said that doctors working in an environment where there are a lot of sick people also have to sterilize themselves. You know, they wash their hands and they walk in like this, put on gloves. We should be that careful in our spiritual practice as well. And once somebody said, Prabhupada, Maya is so strong, and Prabhupada said, Maya is not so strong, you're so weak. And he said, so if you keep yourself strong in Krishna consciousness, if you chant Hare Krishna with attention and feeling, then you develop a natural strength because you have realization. It's the only inoculation, actually, to have realization and taste. Everything else, intellectualism and philosophy and stuff like that, it doesn't have its effect. So now we can have darshan of the deities, and thank you very much, everyone. I'm honored to be here for this Tuesday night sangha. We specifically came here this time so we could attend this sangha. And I'm so thrilled that all of you came out. Thank you very much.
Coordinating this wonderful gathering each week. I guess I see some new faces, so I'll quickly introduce. So this is a weekly gathering, and the goal is exactly what we heard, which is to hear and chant in the association of devotees. And we never miss an opportunity when we have visiting guests in town to invite them to such gatherings. So we are very fortunate that Vaisheshika Prabhu and Mother Mirakula agreed and accepted the invitation to be with us. And like he said, it's actually in the last 4 years, it's the first time that they were here on a Tuesday. So even though this Tuesday Sangha started by their inspiration, so it's like, you know, today is the opportunity when they are here. So I hope that was pleasing to see the turnout. But again, just wanted to thank the devotees who have been very active, because it's easy to do things once or twice, but to keep it going every week is a big effort. And you know, Indresh Prabhu, Puneet Prabhu, of course Kishori Mataji, and you know, I'm sure so many devotees are week after week here to make sure that you know, the vibration continues. And as a result of their sincere effort, we are seeing a good turnout. So.
The genesis of the Sankirtan movement is the intense hearing and chanting amongst the devotees. You see that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement started at Shiva Sangam. We went there this year in Mayapur and chanted and read the pastimes of the Lord there. And anywhere you are in the world, if you come together and hear and chant with pure intention and hear the transcendental sound vibration, it will grow and it will turn into something that you never expected in a most wonderful way. And that is the perfection of the Sankirtan movement, when the devotees are able to come together on a regular basis and hear and chant. Naturally, hearts become purified and devotees develop this enthusiasm. So I was just thinking when I was getting ready for this program that how systematically you followed all the your team, your Sankirtan team, has taken any kind of directive which is meant to expand the Sankirtan movement, and you've immediately implemented it in exemplary ways, and that's why you've been successful. So continue on and you'll continue expanding. Hare Krishna.
And lastly, just again for devotees who probably didn't or don't know about the program, so Vaisheshika Prabhu and Mother Mirakula are here till Sunday, and we have a series of exciting events planned. But I just wanted to draw everyone's attention to morning Srimad Bhagavatam classes. Very similar setting, just different time of the day. So you know, we will continue. We started today, and we have the classes every day till Sunday, and the classes are broadcasted online at www.torontokrishna.com, as well as there is a dial-in number. So I encourage devotees to take advantage of it. If you can't make it in person 7:30 in the morning, please do that online. It's a great opportunity. As well as we have you know, some other events, but details are on the website. So, but just wanted to thank our special guests one more time by loudly chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra.
Kripa Sri Devata Kita Ram Bhavati Yo Vaishnavi Yo Namo